Okay, hi again, and I'm going to be reading today from A Heroic Life, New Teachings from Jesus on the Human Journey. I'm going to read chapter 5, which is called Navigating Challenges. I just want to say that the hero that's referred to in this book is our best self. It's a metaphor for the true self, for our best self, the divine self. And all of the books that I've been bringing through from Jesus have been about embodying this divine self in the world. This seems to be an important message. And Jesus himself, when he was alive 2,000 years ago, embodied the enlightened perspective and consciousness that he was. He was both human and divine. And his message through me, throughout all of the four books I've so far written, is that we are both human and divine. And it is our task to allow, to learn how to allow this divine to express itself more fully through our humanness, while still honoring the fact that we are human and accepting the limitations of that. And so I will begin. And I also just want to mention that throughout the book, Jesus switches using the pronoun he or she every other chapter. So it would have been awkward to refer to he or she all the time throughout this book. So the hero is sometimes referred to as a she, just so you know. All right, chapter 5, Navigating Challenges. Navigating is a perfect word to describe the way the hero moves through challenges, because when you navigate a car or boat or some other vehicle, you take each moment, you take each moment, each twist and turn, one at a time. You're traveling on the road or on the water, 1 mile or stroke of the paddle at a time. You are right there, in the present moment, without a past or future, just taking it as it comes. When you come from, where you've come from has disappeared from view, and you don't know what the path ahead or your destination will be like. The only thing that is real is what you are experiencing right now. And this is so different from how we live most moments, isn't it? We're so involved in the past and the future and bringing that into the present moment that it doesn't seem that the now is all there is. And yet, this is the basic truth, one of the most basic truths, is that this right now, right here, is all we have and all we know for sure. And so that's what this is pointing to. And I think also I want to say that we know what it's like to be very present and very focused. Like if you were in a boat navigating some rapids, your full attention and awareness would be occupied on the rapids and on what you were doing in that moment. And if you were lost in the past or future, you just might lose your life. So activities or events that focus us like that give us a really clear experience of what it's like to be really present. It's a sense of aliveness. There's a great aliveness in those moments when we're very focused. And there's fun. There's fun and there's joy. In fact, you could say that the definition of play is that very focused awareness where you're just lost in the moment. Not in a dangerous situation, but you're lost in having fun. And fun is being lost in the present moment. That is what fun is. Human beings are built to do a very interesting thing. They carry around a mental picture of the past and future in the midst of their present moment experience. People create stories in their minds using the imaginary past and future, and even their imaginary ideas about the present, and call this reality. They believe this imaginary or illusory reality is reality. This is the faulty map, and it gets people into trouble, into suffering. So this is the illusion that spiritual teachers talk about, is we believe that our thoughts are reality, or the thought or the reality that our thoughts paint, which is an imaginary virtual type of reality, but we believe that that is reality, and it's not. It takes us out of reality to believe that that imaginary reality is reality. The real map is whatever is happening now, and now, and now. Every step of the journey is the map. Each step reveals or points to the next step. Like a tracker in the forest, the hero must follow the tracks and signs he comes across that point the way. Only then is the path revealed. The hero has to remain vigilant and present to the clues the present moment provides, or he will get lost. And again, I think this is a really great metaphor for being present. Trackers have their senses very finely tuned, and I would say that there's probably even a sixth sense, or those deeper, more subtle senses that are involved in people who are really good trackers. You know, they happen to just look a certain direction or notice something that another person wouldn't have noticed. So they're very present in the moment, and that presence is very rich, and it also shows the tracker the way. So that is the alternative to listening to the voice in our head tell us what to do with our life and what to do with our day. Okay. Hi again. And I'm going to be reading today from A Heroic Life, new teachings from Jesus on the human journey to the moment, very closely, very carefully, like a tracker would. Okay. The mind might think it knows which way to go, but it can never really know this any more than the tracker's mind can. Okay. It isn't the mind's place to know such things. How can it? The mind is essentially a computer that processes information. How to live, how to be happy, and how to fulfill your unique destiny are not things the computer mind can know. It can tell you how many miles are left on a trip, but it can't tell you how to be the hero of your life. That's fine, because you've been given something else to show you the way. The Father provides you with not only the qualities of the hero, but also a means of guiding you and communicating with you. You are truly loved and cared for on this adventure. To make sure you don't lose your way, you've been given a very simple guidance system that says yes or no to various possibilities. This yes-no guidance is like the hot and cold game you used to play as children, where a player is guided by others shouting, "You're cold, you're getting warmer, you're hot." You can tell whether a course of action is on course or off course simply by noticing how you feel energetically when considering a possibility. A contracted feeling is a no, while an expanded, joyful, excited feeling is a yes. This is as simple a guidance system as can be, but you have to use it. Just as your GPS won't get you where you want to go if you don't use it, if you don't consult or trust this inborn GPS, it can't take you where you're meant to go. This simple yes-no guidance system is often overridden by the mind, which is always ready with a plan for what to do, when, and how. However, the mind's plan is based on conditioning and stored information, not on reality, as the internal guidance system you've been given is. Ideas and information are fine and useful at times. They just aren't enough to guide your life. The information stored in your computer mind is like having half a map, which is not much good, and yet it still seems like a map. If you insist on using a partial map of reality, you will only get so far. The directions from the thought stream are like that. They take you somewhere, but not necessarily where you really want to go. The thought stream only takes you where your ego or conditioning wants you to go. And that's a really important point, isn't it? We think that because we are being given instructions by our mind about how to live our life, that those instructions must have some wisdom, and that must be correct for us. And that is the basic assumption, our default position as human beings, is to simply assume that our thoughts know what they're talking about. But we do find out, don't we, as we go about trying to create a life, that our thoughts are often wrong, and they take us down some bad tracks at times. They get us involved with wrong people, wrong choices, wrong directions. So it's very confusing. We wonder what is going on. We can't help but feel that there's something wrong with us, that our mind isn't trustworthy, because it seems that everyone else is trusting their mind. And so we get frustrated with life or frustrated with God, angry at God because our life doesn't turn out so well. But that's because we're listening to the wrong master. The ego is a pretend master. It's not an actual master. It doesn't know how we should live our life, but it tries to tell us. The trouble is that people assume the thought stream is something wiser than that. If people believed there was another more trustworthy guidance system, they would use the mind only for what the mind is meant for, providing information and analysis along the way, and leave the along the way up to something wiser, the heart, which is the seat of the divine self in the body. Many have called this inborn guidance system the heart because the expansion and contraction of this yes-no guidance system is usually felt in the chest area. This is a clue to differentiating the ego's guidance from the heart's.
Any form of
the guidance occurs in very different parts of the body. I'm going to read chapter 5, which is called Navigating Challenges. To me that they the hero that's referred to in this book is our best self. It's a metaphor for the true self, the divine self.
Carefully,
and all of the books that I've been bringing through from Jesus have been about embodying this divine self in the world.
To convey its information to you. It conveys its information on a much more subtle level within the body, in the subtle energy body, through this sense of openness, expansion versus contraction, tightness. Yes, no. In an internal, subtle, intuitive sense, these are not thoughts. So it's not really that difficult to determine what the heart, what's coming from the heart and what's coming from the mind, because the information is coming through very different channels. The mind is thoughts. The ego is thoughts. And the heart is not thoughts. But you won't be able to tune into that subtle level of reality if you're not able to detach from your thoughts or not able to quiet your mind some, because the mind is so loud compared to the subtle aspect of reality, the internal voice. The mind is loud, it overpowers it, and so people can't hear it, or if they do hear it, the mind talks them out of listening to it. When things go badly as a result of following the ego's guidance, people often blame God, when the Father had a better plan in mind for them all along. This is not to say that there aren't challenges even when you follow the true guidance system, but those challenges will be specifically designed for your growth, not just to get you back on track. When you're off course, life erects roadblocks to get you to change course. So there are challenges that are specifically designed for us that we're meant to experience. And then there are challenges that are devised for us when we find ourselves off track of our soul's plan. Then the divine, the oneness, our guides, spirit, whatever you want to call that, guiding force, grace, designs a roadblock to going in a particular direction that we've chosen that isn't in our best interest. So some of our challenges in life are designed roadblocks to steer us in another direction. And if we were tuned in enough to know what our direction was in the first place, we wouldn't have had to have that challenge. So that's the point that's being made here. These roadblocks can be quite painful, and they're meant to be, because they're telling you what you think you want or what you think you should do is not what you need. Follow your heart. Suffering is meant to point you in a different direction and get you to ask, what do I really want? It is meant to get you to follow your joy, not your thoughts. The only things that make following your joy difficult are your ideas and fears and other people's. And yet, what are ideas and fears? They are a faulty map of reality, a map of an imaginary reality. People are often so sure they know what the right thing to do is and how that will turn out, but they don't. No one does. Everyone is driving blind in this life. No one knows anything until they do. To pretend that you know is to put your faith in a faulty map. The hero is willing to drive blind with no other map but reality, the present moment. The guidance system the hero follows is joy, which is felt as a yes to moving a certain way in the moment. What am I feeling moved to do now? And now? And now? This sounds highly impractical to the mind, but it isn't at all. Following the mind's instructions moment to moment, as most people do, is no more practical. Do this now, then do that, then you should do that, commands the voice in your head. How does that voice come up with those instructions? It deduces them from the programming. The hero does what is in front of him to do, naturally and fluidly. When a challenge arises, the hero still does whatever is in front of him to do. Challenging times are not lived any differently than easy ones. Both call for the same equanimity and straightforward, rational action needed in the moment. When you live this way, challenges are not necessarily so challenging. What makes a situation more challenging than it needs to be are the fears and ideas about what that difficulty is assumed to mean. I'll never fall in love again. I'll be homeless. I'll die. I won't be able to cope. I won't be happy. The hero doesn't fall prey to such stories about what might happen. These are imaginations and only waste and scatters one's energy, just when energy and focus are most needed. The hero has the discipline and inner strength to refrain from such negative stories. I want to just stop a moment and point out that you can see that the ego's way of being in the world is very emotionally based. It's irrational. It's more instinctual and primitively flight or fight based. And what Jesus is pointing to continually here and in other books is the more rational side of life, the more rational side of us, which is our true nature. Our wisdom sees reality as it is, accepts reality as it is. We all have the capacity to be rational, calm, peaceful, clear-headed, but the egoic mind is not. And when we're involved with it, we panic and we get upset and we complain and we lose our capacity to function and be rational within the moment. So the hero is rational. The hero is able to subdue that lower nature, or let's say overcome it, or go beyond it. So in order to connect with the rational side of oneself, the hero has the discipline and inner strength to refrain from such negative stories. He knows there is never a time when negative thoughts are useful. In difficult times, steering clear of negative thoughts is essential. During such times, many discover the importance of staying positive, and they learn to practice being positive because they recognize that doing otherwise would be to sink the ship. Staying afloat in hard times requires the buoy of hope. Hope gives courage and makes it possible to cope. I want to just back up a second and underline one of the statements in the previous paragraph. Negative thoughts are never useful. This is really important to see because it counteracts an inborn tendency to believe our negative thoughts. The scarier our thoughts are, the more we believe them. That's part of our default, part of our primitive egoic survival system, which has gone awry, which is not helpful. So negative thoughts are never helpful. They're never useful. They're never true. And, you know, once you see this, you can be free of them. You can just notice them when they, excuse me. You can just notice the negative thoughts when they arise and then just leave them alone. Don't touch them. Don't join with them. Hope gives courage and makes it possible to cope. When you lose hope, you lose courage and the ability to cope. You become discouraged. Discouragement lasts only as long as you believe a negative thought, while courage, because it is a quality of your true nature, is everlasting. As soon as a discouraging thought is dropped, your innate courage shines through. What a gift courage is. It isn't something you have to develop, but what naturally arises when you stop believing your thoughts. So that's really good news, that it isn't that hard to find courage. Courage is available whenever we're not indulging in discouragement. Hope is another gift from the Father. It is built into the human to have hope, even under the direst of circumstances. Hope springs eternal, expresses this truth. Within you is a wellspring of hope and love and peace and joy. Hope rises up in difficult times to support you and counteract the discouragement, despair, and hopelessness of the ego when it feels most powerless. So hope is an example of a positive thought. So we seem to be programmed as human beings to hope for the best in the future, alongside of expecting the worst. We also always hope for a better future. It's just built in to do that, and that's an interesting thing. So positive thoughts of hope for a better future are examples of thoughts that might be in your thought stream that could be useful in counteracting the negative thoughts that are in your thought stream. And hopeful thoughts can also be conjured up by your true self or used by your true self to counteract and neutralize the negativity in the thought stream. So, as a non-dual teacher, I used to be wary of the idea that hope was necessary or useful or true, because to me, I saw it as another thought, just another thought, and we don't need any of our thoughts, not even those thoughts of hope. But Jesus in this book and in other books has often made this point of hope being a gift that is given us to get us by, to help us survive. And so hope is an example of a positive thought that works for us. And when we can use that and tap into that, it's for our benefit. When the ego doesn't get what it wants, or when you lose something or someone dear to you, the ego falls into despair and other negative emotions. It feels powerless and defeated. But these feelings, however real they may seem, are never the truth. They are the false map. They are telling you lies. You will never be happy again. This is too much to handle. Your life is over. Nothing will ever be right again. The beauty of this life you've been given is that none of your negative feelings tells the truth. While the positive ones, hope, peace, joy, and love, do. You are meant to discover this truth about life. Negative feelings are a mirage created by the mind. Hope is the truth because things are always changing and moving on to something new. With every death or loss come many new beginnings, new births. Life is unstoppably producing more life. It can't help itself. And the qualities of the hero, including happiness, love, and peace, are always available, no matter what the circumstances. You are always strong enough to cope with whatever happens in life. You only need to realize this. Not only do things naturally move on to something new, but you're likely to have become a better human being for having gone through the fire of your trials. You are bound to have become stronger, more positive, and better able to cope with any future difficulties. Challenges transform you into the hero that each of you is meant to be. You are meant to come away from a challenge with greater wisdom, patience, compassion, endurance, inner strength, and a greater capacity to refrain from negative emotions and stories. If you don't learn these things, you will continue to suffer even after the difficult situation is over. The remaining bitterness, resentment, sadness, and other unpleasant emotions become your next challenge until you overcome them. If you don't master these feelings, they will be the master of you, and you'll have little peace and happiness. If you don't turn your lemons into lemonade, you'll be stuck with lemons, stuck in a challenge of your own making. When you're going through a crisis, negativity is an indulgence you cannot afford. There is no room for negative stories, self-pity, hopelessness, fear, guilt, regret, resentment, revenge, or anger. You have to find another way to cope than indulging in these, because they will take you down. People who have successfully faced extreme situations got by not indulging in mental and emotional negativity. they also learn to take one moment at a time and focus their attention on whatever was in front of them, not farther down the road. I love the saying that my mother used to repeat so often to me. It's such a great aphorism. Cross that bridge when you come to it. That's so wise. Cross that bridge when you come to it. You can't cross the bridge before you get to it, can you? And so trying to figure out the future or solve a situation or second guess the future is like trying to cross a bridge before you come to it. What you focus your attention on is critical because your attention is like a spotlight. Whatever you turn it towards becomes your experience, your reality. If you turn it towards something unreal, such as the ego's fears, negative feelings, and its coulds and shoulds, the ego's world will become your reality. Your fears, other feelings, and mistaken beliefs will seem real. But if you give your attention to what is actually real here and now, and not to any unnecessary thoughts, you will gain access to every resource you need to cope with this moment, which is all you ever need. Trying to cope with imagined future moments or change moments that have already passed is fruitless and a waste of energy. More importantly, if your focus is on the past or the future, you won't have access to the hero's qualities, which are only available in the here and now. For this reason, staying present is the key to getting through any challenge and also to being happy. You can get through anything if you take one moment at a time. For example, if you have to have surgery, you get up that morning and get ready. How difficult is it to take a shower and put your clothes on? How difficult is it to drive to the hospital? How difficult is it to wait in the waiting room? How difficult is it to get wheeled into the operating room? How difficult is it to be anesthetized? How difficult is it to wake up in the hospital bed afterwards? You get the picture. The only way any of these moments can be difficult is if your fears and worries make them so. One moment at a time is all reality ever is. One slice of time, gone in an instant, and replaced by another slice of time. All you ever have to do is get through that one slice of time. Most slices are ordinary, and what to do is obvious. Only a relatively few moments are intense or crisis-ridden, and even those pass quickly into something else. Even with those, what to do is often obvious. And I think this is a very good point. How many super critical, horrifying moments have you actually had in your life? We're very blessed in this country, and perhaps this isn't true in other parts of the world, but most of us, I'll speak for myself, sure, there have been challenges, but the majority of my days do not have even many bumps in them, much less a crisis. So I'm, you know, at the later part of my life, and I've had, I could count on one hand the number of really difficult moments I've had in my life. And yet we're constantly fearing, or the ego rather, is constantly fearing the future as if the most terrible thing we can imagine is about to happen. And the likelihood of that is not strong at all. So why spoil these moments that are simple and peaceful and uncomplicated with thoughts about problems that don't exist? The mind makes life complicated and unpleasant by fearing, doubting, and obsessing about every possibility and option, while most moments can be handled easily enough without much thought. People think they have to figure out what to do and imagine future moments. But the hero lets the future take care of itself because he knows the future never actually arrives. In reality, all there ever is one moment moving naturally and gracefully into the next, with or without the mind's ceaseless thoughts. The mind thinks it has to manage every moment, or life will go nowhere or fall apart, while quite the opposite is true. The more the mind is involved in trying to manage life, the more complicated and trying life becomes. The intellect is not the problem, but rather the aspect of the mind that has been co-opted by the ego, the voice in your head. It is the voice of self-doubt, hysteria, fear, anger, judgment, and blame. How can it possibly manage your life well? And this is a good point, isn't it? If we really look at that voice in your head, it's hysterical in a bad way. It panics, it exaggerates, it blames, it's unkind. And this is the same voice we're supposed to trust to give us good guidance for our life? I don't think so. So the thing about the illusion is, if you really look at it with the least bit of rationality, it's really easy to see how flawed the voice in your head is, how flawed the illusion is, how untrue, how unput together it is. It's just that we don't question it generally. But when you turn around and look at that crazy voice in your head, it's silly, it's redundant, it's unpleasant, it's unhappy, it's complaining. If you had someone in your life who spoke like that to you, you would run as fast as you could away from that person. And yet, we let it guide our lives. Until we don't. The stories people tell about what they're going through make life more difficult than it needs to be. When people tell a story defining their experience as terrible, that story becomes their experience. Words are powerful because they determine your inner experience, and your inner experience becomes your experience. Because after all, experience is subjective, isn't it? So you create your inner experience by what you believe. You create an inner climate. Jesus has often used that metaphor, that word, to describe the inner subjective reality that is created by our thoughts and beliefs and feelings. It's an inner climate that we live in and we carry around with us. And that becomes our experience of reality. And yet, if we didn't have those thoughts and we didn't have those feelings, that would not be our experience of reality. So if you move out of those thoughts and feelings, you have a completely different experience of reality. Focusing on a story creates feelings, which are an inner experience, and that inner experience overshadows reality, the actual present moment experience. You become lost in an unreal inner world and out of touch with what is real right in front of you. People live in an internal world of their own making, created by their stories. This internal world is the world of the ego, and it is maintained by the thought stream. If you stop believing this thought stream, you land in reality and have a very different experience of life. In reality, there is just this moment and nothing else. Just think, that's reality. Just this moment and nothing else. So let that sink in. This reality is always changing, but it is always just this moment now here. Whatever you're experiencing in your little locality of the universe. This is the enlightened human's experience. It is the experience of the eternal now, of life at its truest and most real. In any moment, there might be something to do or say, but there's no problem because there's no story. No good-bad duality exists either, because that duality and every other one are the mind's machinations. Without such dualities, desires drop away, and with them fear. So this is a good point also. Dualities, dualities are things like, I like this and I don't like that. And that is what is behind our desires, because we're going to desire what we like and we're going to want to avoid what we don't like. So this good-bad duality that the ego sees the world through ends up creating desires for us to have a world and have our life be and have ourselves be the way we think, what our mind thinks is good, and to avoid what our mind thinks is bad. So this duality creates desires, and then we suffer over those desires because we don't have the control over life to get what we want. Have you noticed? In the moment, there is only what is, and the hero considers that to be good. It is all good, all God. And what would be the point of seeing it any other way? I want to repeat that. And what would be the point of seeing it any other way? So this is a great mantra. It is all good, all God. And what would be the point of seeing it any other way? There's no point, is there? It does no good to see it any other way. And it does all the good to see it this way, that it is good, because it's the truth. And when we see reality truly as it is, we don't suffer. We're happy. And we're meant to be happy. Why would you choose to suffer when you see that you don't have to? Once you learn the secret to happiness, you don't go back to being unhappy, except when you've been temporarily taken in by the thought stream. It is your destiny to live in the moment and leave the false reality behind. It is your destiny to be happy. One of the most powerful tools the awakening hero has is gratitude. It is the way out of discouragement, despair, and every other difficult emotion. The hero learns to feel gratitude throughout the day for the wonderful little things in life that are such a gift and so often taken for granted by the ego. The sun is shining, deep gratitude. Another day on this amazing planet, deep gratitude. The bird song, deep gratitude. Another day with a beloved dog, deep gratitude. A good night's sleep, deep gratitude. The ability to walk and talk and do things, deep gratitude. Meeting with a good friend, deep gratitude. A fly's ability to cling to the ceiling, the bird's ability to fly, the sky's ability to rain, awe and wonder. These and countless other things are reasons for ongoing gratitude. This is life. These simple things. Life is full of wonders, and they are there just for you, for your pleasure. This and every moment is replete with them and complete. So this is what you get in exchange for all of your beliefs and ideas and feelings. You get this simple joy and wonder and gratitude of this marvelous and miraculous world that we live in. The here and now and the immediate experience is an experience of this world as it is, untouched by your thoughts and feelings. And this world as it is amazing. It is an amazing creation. Everything is amazing. You know, just like your fingers. I mean, look at your hands. They are amazing. We don't even know with our intelligence, we couldn't even begin to create a hand that can do everything that our hands do. We're coming close, I guess. Gratitude opens the heart and makes all other qualities of your true nature accessible. The feeling of gratitude is a feeling of happiness, love, and peace. The fact that you can create these positive feelings by simply noticing or naming what you're grateful for makes the practice of gratitude a very handy and powerful tool for your transformation. It takes little time to notice or name what you're grateful for. When practiced daily, this can become a way of being in the world. Instead of giving your attention to the thought stream, try noticing and naming what you're grateful for throughout your day, and this will change your life. A potent formula for happiness is to replace thinking about yourself with gratitude. No matter what kind of challenge you are experiencing, gratitude and a recognition of the greater reality surrounding that difficulty will help you cope with it. There is much more to any moment than whatever may be unpleasant about it, and always much to be grateful for. Even when it seems like your life is falling apart, the sun still shines, the birds still sing, you still have the capacity to love. People are still kind, and beauty is still everywhere. The same wondrous world exists and is there to support you. If you are experiencing physical pain, notice what is here besides the pain and your thoughts and feelings about it. What else is here that you can be grateful for? If you are experiencing sadness, anger, hurt, or any other unpleasant emotion, notice what else is here that you can be grateful for. If you are caught in memories of the past or fears of the future, notice what you can be grateful for right now. What else is here besides the story of your difficulty? What are you seeing, hearing, sensing, and intuiting? Notice the subtle experience of your divine self rejoicing in life just as it is. So the joy, the happiness, the peace is in dropping into this more subtle realm that is accessed by being very present in your body and senses in the moment. You drop into the subtle reality, the beingness of your true being, and your being is exquisitely, supremely happy. You can always be grateful that whatever you're experiencing isn't more challenging than it is, that the headache isn't worse, that you broke only one leg, that you are as young as you'll ever be. I like that one. that you have what you do have. Gratitude is a place of seeing the glass as half full instead of half empty. It's a matter of acknowledging what is here instead of focusing on what is not. What is here is real. What is not here is not real. What resources are here? What support is here? What love is here? What beauty is here? What peace is here? You can even be grateful for the challenge because that has its gift. The greatest gifts are born from the greatest challenges, and no other way, really. In this world, growth is accomplished through trials, and this has to be accepted or you will suffer more than you need to. No one escapes challenges. The hero knows this and doesn't take them personally. They happen to everyone, and even they are good. The hero asks, "How might this challenge be serving my growth?" He might not have an answer right away, but the question reframes the experience, turning the so-called curse into a blessing. If God is good and goodness is behind life, then even difficult situations must have their usefulness, and so they do. So I'm just going to repeat that question. How might this challenge be serving my growth? And even if you don't have an answer, and you might very well not have an answer for that, many times we never have an answer for that, or maybe the answer doesn't come for years beyond the challenge. We find out how it has served the growth, our growth. But still, asking the question reminds us that there is purpose and meaning in all of our experiences, and that we can use them for our growth, and that growth is good. This growth is going towards goodness, love, and becoming the hero of our life. This growth, the challenges are creating the hero. They're bringing the hero out in our life. They're forcing us to make contact with the hero's resources, with the hero's qualities of courage and strength and patience and kindness and compassion. The challenges force us to develop the hero's qualities. They force us to become our best self. If you've lived long enough, you have realized the transformative power of challenges. Being sick makes you appreciate being well. Losing someone reveals the strength of your love for that person and of love in general, and the eternalness of that love. Having little shows you that happiness doesn't depend on having, but on being. Losing your possessions reveals what you possess that can't be taken away. Getting old humbles you, softens your heart, and teaches you what true beauty is. Making mistakes makes you wise. Death shows you that you're not your body. Furthermore, all of these challenges increase your compassion. Life is so good that it even gives you gifts while it gives you hardships. And to repeat another point that's often been made, the gifts, life, one of the greatest gifts is that life gives you the resources to overcome your challenges. So it doesn't leave you adrift alone without the resources you need to overcome your challenges. We've all been given courage, strength, patience, resourcefulness, the help of others also. So we've all been given what we need. So, you know, our challenges are not coming from the mean-spirited God who's enjoying our suffering. The challenges, we are God, and we've chosen those challenges for ourselves. And we've also come in with the resources needed to overcome them and become stronger and better people as a result. Your greatest resource is something you might not even be aware of. It is what is aware of everything you are aware of. What is aware of a thought? What is aware of a feeling? This is a great mystery, isn't it? That which is aware, that which is looking out of your eyes and living your life, is who you really are. You know it well. It's been with you all your life. And without it, all experience would be impossible. You would be impossible. It is so close to you that it is easily overlooked. Like a fish that doesn't know it lives in water, you don't notice the real you. It remains the silent watcher and experiencer of all you do. In the here and now, you discover what a hero you actually are. That aware, spacious being that is looking out of your eyes is always in perfect equanimity and perfect peace. Flowing from that space is love, compassion, gratitude, and acceptance. This mysterious space that you are has qualities, and they are those of the hero. The hero is not so substantial after all. It is not a he or she, young or old, fat or thin, single or married. To be seen, the hero must wear a costume, but the hero is not the costume any more than an actor is what he or she pretends to be. The real you is what animates the character you are playing, and it is formless. What is even more miraculous is that this hero is the same inside every human being. You are this hero, and so is everyone else. The same essence is behind every costume, living every life. This great mystical truth is not actually hidden very well, and at the end of the hero's sojourns on earth, it is not hidden at all. This is why the hero is able to be so happy and carefree, even under duress. Because the truth about life is very good indeed. It couldn't be better. Life is a celebration of life, or it can be. And that is the end of this chapter, so that is pretty good, perfect timing. So I just want to say that if you do have any questions, you're welcome to email me at Gina, G-I-N-A, at radicalhappiness.com, which is my website. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have. If you find anything confusing, I always do learn from my readers, and I really appreciate Facebook for that. It's really been helpful to hear how people sometimes are confused about quotes that I put up. So we're all learning, and I'm learning from you, and I appreciate you being here, so I thank you. And I look forward to talking with you again next week. So I guess I'm leaving you with about a minute. I think you can handle that. So until next week then, bye-bye.